Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our podcast today. We're going to be talking about pension systems. My name is Chris Gutowski, and today we have a very special guest. We're speaking with Robert Holzmann, Austrian economist and former governor of the Austrian Central Bank from 2019 to 2025, I believe. He's also a member of the Austrian Academy of Sciences and spent over a decade at the World Bank. We're here to talk about pension systems, and we're speaking with someone who is a specialist in pension systems, labor markets, and social protection policy. First question, when we look globally, right now only a handful of countries actually fully adopted this model. Why is that the case?
This is a very good question, and we are still investigating, you know, that. What is it? Why is it that no others have adopted it? One easy answer is to say that this model is perhaps the best one one could imagine for an unfunded public pension system. But as it is perfect, it's difficult then for the politicians to improve it. And politicians don't like perfection. They want to have the changes there because they don't gain votes by having a perfect model. They gain by providing specific benefits to some of its voters there. This may be one of the reasons. But there are also other reasons why, it hasn't come off as easily as it is. And the range from issues that it is quite cumbersome to move from the existing model to a new one. And Poland also has seen it to some extent there. This is one of the things there. But there are other reasons as well, which have to do that you need to have some quite of technical capacity to do it, because it requires record keeping for everybody at each time. And this requires only some technical capacity level of informatics, computer science at this time, and many developing countries don't have it, etc. So there are many reasons why it's not there, but the conference is a conference amongst aficionados of a disease, mm-hmm. and we discuss issues, improvements, but also ways in order to make it more better known worldwide. And the conference is number four in a series of conferences with publications. So we will continue to provide information, publications, and push countries to move in this direction. It would be particularly important because this approach would allow a European pension approach, which consists in having a same structure, but different contribution rates. So it would be, if you want, so like the value-added tax, which is the same everywhere, but with different rates. Here would be a pension system, which is the same everywhere, but with different rates. And it would allow, it would facilitate labor mobility. That's something which I think would be one of the main advantages there, but I'm afraid it will take some time.
If I may add, it's also the issue of the development of the countries and the labor market characteristics. I mean, definitely the non-financial defined contribution systems are good for countries that are relatively developed with high coverage on the labor market, people paying contributions, because the system is based on the link between lifetime contributions and life expectancy at retirement age. If we have people who do not contribute for many reasons, it's also not a system which can provide good pension protection. So for developing countries, they need to think about models that link pensions, maybe not to contributions, but for example, to value-added tax, which we also discussed during the conference. So it's also the issue how to look at the pension system in the context of the level of development, labor market, demography, because at the end of the day, all of that matters when you design a system that fits to the country. And you cannot make a mistake, because once you introduce a reform of a pension system, it should stay there for a long time.
That's right, ideally, right? But you mentioned that it's right now for developed countries. So for the developing countries or emerging markets, it's still not an option, would you say, right? Not for now, but moving forward, maybe potentially in the future as well.
Well, this is the hope that the more formality exists in a country. But what we know is formality is something which takes a lot of time. There have been only a few countries where formality was established quickly, like Korea, mm-hmm. in short period of times. For others, they're still struggling, most Latin American countries. where the majority of the labor force is informal, where we offered some guidance for some of the elements. So Brazil adopted some elements of NDC, but not NDC itself, because the economy or the formality is not sufficiently advanced to allow that.
So is it common right now for countries to take inspiration from NDCs rather than fully implement NDCs? Is that kind of where you think it's heading in many countries?
Yes, in particular to the extent that one says, okay, if and as a country provides pension, what is the reference for people when they retire? Mm-hmm. And here, of course, the logic of individuals and the logic of governments, researchers differ, because individuals would love to have their pension depending on the best years of income and a little bit on the length of it, but the best years of income. And this was the model which we had for a long time. But of course, it's not really sustainable. What NDC does it, how to say, it creates a proportionate system in which everything counts from the very beginning towards the very end. And if you had a great income for some years, but not for many, in this case, how to say, it has only little impact, not much more. And this is a critical part of the system. It is very, how to say, an honest system. What you pay in, you get out. But what you get out is only what you paid in. And this is kind of a mechanism which makes it highly egalitarian, but also something which policymakers dislike, because policymakers like to offer little advantages here and there. And if you have such a system, cheating or trying to have some political additions doesn't work. That's the reason our interpretation why the system is not as universal as we had hoped for.
So governments hesitate because it limits their flexibility? That's a good way of saying it, would you say?
Exactly. And one paper by a political economist, actually, too, was already in the first volume. It's called, how to say, Smith into the Mast. So politicians don't like it, you know. They don't want follow rules and cannot intervene and create disadvantages there. And I think this version of politicians is still there, that they have, once they decide on it, if they want to follow it, it has to be a system. What you pay in, you get out, but you get out only what you paid in.
But there is certain creativity you can introduce even within the NDC system. So, for example, in Poland, we have these add-ons, which are lump sum payments like the
13th and 14th. I was going to ask about
exactly.
That, exactly.
So it's above the NDC. So it's not financed from contributions. Yeah. It is not a part of the pension system, but nevertheless, it is given to pensioners. So in a way, even with NDC, you can do things.
I was going to say that governments could use these kind of methods before elections, but that's a little bit of a different story. But coming back to what you said about egalitarianism, what you put in is what you get. One thing that many people ask about the regards to childcare or maternity leave, all that kind of stuff, how does that affect it? Because in particular for women, they're hit with like a triple whammy, right? Maternity leave, parental leave, and they live longer, technically, than men, especially in the developed world, right? We're seeing this. So how does that affect them?
First and foremost, I mean, for most of the NDC systems, actually, the life expectancy is calculated unisex. So this mm-hmm. means that even if women live longer, the pensions they receive, if they have accumulated the same capital, retired at the same age, this is the same, which is, of course, very frequently the case that they don't accumulate the same capital. The way to deal with it in the NDCs is that for the periods of maternity and parental leaves, there are contributions that are credited or paid from the public money to individual pension accounts. And basically all NDC countries do that to a smaller and a larger extent. So for maternity leave, it's usually very similar to the wage level. So there is not a big loss.
Okay.
For the parental leaves, it is usually smaller. So in that case, women lose, depending on the country. So in Sweden, the loss is relatively smaller. I think in Latvia, it is the largest. But in general, the design is that for the period that you are not receiving wages because of the justified situation, mm-hmm. like indeed maternity, parental leave, but also unemployment, contributions can be credited to individual accounts.
Okay.
And in addition to that, NDC is highly egalitarian because it allows to deal with changes of marital status over time, which means, sir, you are individual, then you marry, and then for whatever reason you have 10 years later divorce. What you can do, and if your wife is not working or has earned less, you can aggregate it and split it. It's a very simple mechanism in order to deal with changing circumstances in life. Not too many countries have introduced it for the time being, but this is definitely something which, is open for modern times, where you want to hedge against, these particularities of life.
Looking ahead, with aging populations and lower birth rates again in the developed world, again oftentimes in the West, do you think this system will become more common in general?
The problem is every pension system is dependent on demographics. Pension system is a demographic affair. And if the demographics is deteriorating, so you have more elderly and less youngsters, whatever your pension system is, you have problems.
And this is a problem, I think, everywhere right now.
Exactly. And if you look at it, if you look into the global north, this is US, Europe, China, you have a major avalanche of population aging taking place. This is something which, unfortunately, politicians everywhere ignore, and they don't want to live up to that. But that is something, which can be slightly only facilitated by NDC. But at the end of the day, what we have, if we have too little youngsters, too many old people, the current system, as it is an NDC system, it offers a mechanism in order to deal with aging. It's divided to somewhat, if you accumulate it, by the remaining life expectancy. But this is only part of it. The other part of it, which is still demographic, so if you have less youngsters, more elderly, this would still make the pension system bring it in a bad situation. So what needs to be done actually is very much to create a labor market for the elderly. The mere mechanisms by linking it to remaining life expectancy is great, but it's not sufficient anymore. We will have to have additional elements to bring people along on the labor market. So not only, you get older, more life expectancy, retire later. No, you need to retire much, much later.
But it's still not very popular to make retirement age higher, right?
Exactly. This is, the biggest challenge we will have for all societies in the global north now, in 50 years, also to the global south there, that we have to think well beyond our current retirement age. But as you said, politicians hate that. But this is the message to give her. NDC is a great contribution to that. But in addition to that, the mere demography requires that we really have to think about thinking beyond it. Or even now saying the pension system, Bismarckian in the 19th century, end of the 19th century, was a good innovation. But we have now to rethink the pension system. And particularly, do away with the idea retirement is an eternal vacation. It's not. Retirement, if you are not active, it's boring. So what you need to do is really, think about it. And some people, an Austrian CEO, he was the head of Spar Austria, he wrote a book with the title translated Era Retirement, in which he makes the point, retirement is bad for your health, it's bad for your intellect, it's bad for everything. So we have to think to give things up and think working longer and longer, but not because we need to, but because it keeps us fit. And I always claim I'm an example for that.
But it is interesting how we're seeing in politics, for example, the age is getting higher and higher to be senators, et cetera. We're seeing this in sports. We're seeing this entertainment. And yet retirement ages haven't really gone up, right?
Exactly.
If anything, sometimes they even go down.
Exactly.
No, they usually don't go down except for Poland.
I know. Canada also did that a little bit, too. But anyway.
If we look at the experience of NDC countries, it's definitely also, we see that the Nordic countries, that is Sweden and Norway, they really have this very thoughtful policy of developing the system. So we've heard, for example, from the Swedish head of pensions agency that they've been increasing retirement age, and according to their assessments and projections, the current financial situation of the pension system is in such a good shape that they even can pay more pensions thanks to the fact that they've accumulated reserves, they've raised retirement ages, they have very high employment rates. So in a way, the NDC system holds despite of the relatively, maybe not bad demography, but also falling fertility levels in Sweden as everywhere across Europe. So there's way to deal with that. The issue is that in Sweden, they actually have a political pensions board that was established when the pension system was introduced, and it functions all the time. So there is a necessity to build a consensus around changes in the pension system at the political level. And once this consensus is reached, everybody sticks to it. So this is an important sort of political economy feature of the Swedish system that makes it less immune to, let's say, political attempts to introduce some changes.
But in the case of Sweden, one advantage I think they have in terms of comparing to, say, Japan, they have a lot of immigrants. So they're even though they have the birth rates are declining, their population hasn't really declined. But in the case of, like, Japan, it's a ticking time bomb, literally, right? So Sweden has that advantage. But actually, another question regarding pensions in the future. What about AI? So we're on the advent of AI right now, and a lot of young people are even thinking what kind of jobs will be available in the future. So it's kind of like a off-topic conversation, but what's going to happen regarding that?
I, how to say, invested quite some time recently in AI, try AI out. My take is that number one is everybody has to be very versatile on AI. So nobody will escape if we have to do that. Number two is that despite AI and the advantages there, I will say, once we know how to utilize it, our jobs will change, but we won't get, sidelined by AI. A few things, we all know them, you know, reviewing or correcting text, etc., this can be done. But my experience with AI is, you know, we're still much better off linking information together and being creative there, but we have to do and sit down and learn how to use AI. And given that, our jobs will change, definitely. And nowadays, some programs that can organize your whole day, etc., etc., or they come up with some ideas. But I claim at the time being, when I look at some of the texts formulated there, I'm still much, much better than AI.
But the future, there are, of course, different scenarios and different perspectives. So if you listened to Professor Jakub Growiec from our university, he would tell you that we are doomed and AI will take over
end
everything.
End of the world, right?
We really don't know. What we know, because demography, at least for the next few decades, is quite predictable, because the children that were born, and they will reach economic activity and the labor market activity within the next 20 or so years. So yeah. Basically, that's more or less determined. And we know that there will be less people in the working age. And if they can enhance their productivity by using AI, it's for example the Copilot. It's called Copilot because it's in a way a tool that we use to enhance our productivity. That is very helpful, because if we have less people working, more people retiring, then the buzzword or the solution is actually increased productivity and the fact that people can, because of their productivity, earn more wages and then pay more contributions and finance pensions for the more numerous generation. That is my sort of more optimistic view of the world with the AI. The issue is that we really need to think how to make AI more equalizing, because it can create a lot of inequality. So people with low skills may actually have difficulties on the labor market. I will do another promoting thing here. At the Warsaw School of Economics, we are also providing, in cooperation with Google, this course, AI, the Skills of Tomorrow, that is available to everybody, especially small and medium-sized enterprises and their employees, to develop their skills to meet the challenges of the future.
It's true that every single, I mean, maybe not every generation, but every once in a while when there's huge disruption on the market, you know, the Industrial Revolution, there's this fear that jobs will be replaced, gone. But we as humans are able to create new jobs, things that we can't even imagine. I'll be also optimistic on that front as well. Anything else you'd like to add?
I think adding on this AI part of it, at the lower level, one element will certainly exist that in 10, 20, 30 years down the road, even before, we will have our robots which can do the gardening, which can do the building of houses, etc., which by itself is great because others don't have to do it and it's painstaking. But of course, the others will have to train them, and services, personal services, will still be requested. So my sense is at the level of personal services, there will be a lot of demand there. But the painstaking work, you know, whatever it is, they will be taken over. And actually, I'm a very optimistic view of what this will do. It will make our life much easier. But definitely, one have to work on it. And looking into it for a conference in Riyadh recently, in January, actually, not so recent anymore, I went through the current possibilities to learn about AI, to apply it, what the schools are doing, what it is doing there. And actually, I've also a bit disappointed by what everything I read from OECD and other institutions there. How to say, how to teach and how to learn about AI is not very generalized. So it's a little bit more that we have to do our own experimentation. What I've seen so far, how to learn AI. And I think there's something where we need to, we kind of suffer. Teachers to spend more ideas on it, how best to do it. Because if the group of individuals, which are the most in danger, don't have easy access to learning on AI, they will suffer. So I think it's important to move into that, not for us. I think we can learn it, but the others need to better guidance. And my sense is, I haven't seen it so far.
I agree with you fully, and I also, someone who works in academia, I could say the same thing. I think it's a very important tool. I think that universities in general should actually teach people how to actually use AI, right, effectively. And coming back a little bit to what you said about robots in the future, Bill Gates was the one who said that there should be a robot tax. Right. So actually, people are going to lose their jobs, well, and the robots are going to be there taking over, well, they need to be taxed. That was an idea of Bill Gates, but we'll see if that comes into fruition.
It's an old tax which I had discussed with a former minister of social affairs some 40 years ago. And at this time, I didn't think it is necessary. I think in the future, yes, there may be other means in order to get tax revenues. Maybe a robot tax, but at the moment, I think it's still something which, as I say, can be compensated by other means. It makes sense if it makes economic sense. If it doesn't make economic sense, one shouldn't do it.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy schedule. We really appreciate it. We're really honored to be here first to speak with us on this important topic.
Thank you for having us. It was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.